I'm Brian Roth, and you're listening to the Good Beer Hunting Podcast. Welcome back to the GBH Collective, a special series of interviews where we have the chance to dive a little deeper with good beer hunting contributors and friends on topics of writing, beer, and the stories you read and hear on GBH. It's been exciting to bring you the voices of those behind our stories, and if you haven't had the chance to better know Good Beer Hunting's Claire Bullen and Kyle Kostronik, those episodes are waiting in our podcast archives. In the meantime, we're switching it up just a little this week as we shift from our group of writers to a friend of the program in upstate New York. Will Cleveland is a reporter for the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, where along with coverage of breaking news, he's the newspaper's man about town when it comes to beer. He's a native to the area, and in all the time I've traveled back home to the Finger Lakes, excited to learn more about how the beer scene has changed, Will has consistently been a great source of info from his regular coverage of New York's rapidly evolving beer industry. When we sat down in September to chat, we touched on a collection of latest news and how upstate New York beer is changing, including what it means when the world-famous other half comes to town. You'll also hear about process, storytelling, and what it means to be a reporter covering beer in an ever-expanding market. This is Will Cleveland, reporter, animal lover, and one of the nicest guys you'll meet in beer. Listen in. So you were just in Cleveland, which is not a pun.
No, Cleveland was in Cleveland.
You are Will Cleveland. You were in Cleveland. Tell me about your visit there. You said it had been a couple years, and you had a beer in mind when you were going back this time. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, it was fantastic. My girlfriend normally limits me to the amount of breweries I can do over a few days. So, if we're there for 3 days, she was like, okay, you can do 3 breweries. And normally, she's such a good sport, and she enjoys beer a lot like I do. She'll say, okay, we can maybe do, we did this one pretty quick. Let's go to another one. And that's kind of how it ended up going. So we ended up doing, I think, 5 or 6 breweries. But I was really excited to check out some of the newer places in Cleveland. Masthead was really cool, right downtown. And then right around the block, maybe like a half a mile away, was Noble Beast, which was tiny, but really, really cool and really cozy and like just my kind of tap room. They had a really nice Kolsch, a really nice alt beer.
Many people would get excited about those particular things.
But I mean, Masthead was doing really cool stuff too. I mean, they had, they're making those turbid hazy juice bombs, and they were doing really well. I mean, I've been kind of spoiled to have a lot of, some of the New England heavyweights and other half, and some of those beers in Masthead were pretty darn close to that level, which was really cool to see. Mm-hmm. I like those beers when they're, dry and not as high in residual sugars, They actually taste like they've been fully fermented, which is always nice.
It sounds like then when you travel together, at least, that there is at least some kind of game plan. When you think about traveling and beers involved, how is it that you think about it? What are you doing in advance planning to consider what you want to do or see or taste?
I kind of talk to people I know who have maybe been to those areas. I'm fortunate that I have a lot of smart people who I can speak with, who can kind of give me ideas. So sometimes I use Untappd as a resource to kind of look at, see if any of my friends have been to this place or anything like that. But in general, I'm just reading so much about beer. It's kind of one of my passions. So, I kind of have a good idea of some of the places I want to go to. It's like I was really intent on going to Collision Bend in Cleveland because it's the new project from Luke Purcell, who used to be the head brewer at Great Lakes, right in the flats of Cleveland. It's also a really great brew pub, and we, enjoyed our visit there. But, so I do enough reading about things in and around Rochester and regionally that I kind of have an idea of, what I want to go to. And I'm also nerdy enough that I keep a list on my phone of because I try to get to Toronto quite frequently. So I'll have, a list of like 10 or 15 places I want to check out. Every visit always includes Bellwoods. And then, I'll try to check out another new place that I haven't been to yet. And it's just like that city is just exploded with great craft beer. So it really makes it possible to check out new places every time.
And I suppose a similar thing could be said about where we are. So we're in Rondequoit specifically, but Rochester colloquially, I suppose.
Yeah, Monroe County.
The way that things have shifted locally here, especially, going back several years, but even just in the last year or so, and I guess you could even put it in a month's time frame.
No kidding.
If you wanted to. Having been around this and covered it and thought about it actively, How does that kind of show up in the way that you perceive some of these places that you go to that are growing as well? Something like we're in Toronto, where you're saying, you know, things are happening all the time.
It's interesting because up until 2010, Rochester only had three breweries. Or Rochester, when I say Rochester, I mean Monroe County, you know, the county surrounding Rochester. You know, we only had Genesee, which is, you know, the state's oldest brewery, been around since 1878, you know, known for that kind of cream ale and, you know, Jenny Red Eye and Jenny Light. So, and then we had Rohrbach, which started in 91, you know, which is kind of what made, not cream ale, which is what made Scotch Ale famous in Rochester, because that's kind of like that's kind of like the craft beer of Rochester. You know, the two beers I would say Rochester are known for would be like the Scotch Ale and then obviously the Genesee Cream Ale.
I feel like both of those two are such iconic representations of what I would imagine kind of like that Northeast upstate New York flavor profile.
Absolutely, without question. Yeah. But so Rochester really started to explode in 2010, what I kind of call like the second wave. Like we had a few other little places that opened and closed in that window between like 98 and like 2010. There was another place that opened in Honey Eye Falls, Custom Brew Crafters. That's now called CB Craft Brewers. So Custom Brew Crafters, craft brewing, whatever. I never quite understood that, but that's, you know, that's branding. You know, they started in 97. So those have kind of been like for that 12, 13 year period, that was Rochester beer. And then 2010 really saw this start of big growth with, Rock Brewing, with Naked Dove down in Canandaigua, and then with Three Heads, which was contract brewing at this point, at CB's down in Honey Falls. And then that, what I call it, kind of the second wave. So that's kind of what opened the floodgates in this area, really. And then, you know, we got to the point now where in Monroe County alone, we have 25 breweries. And then in Rochester, we have 10 or 11, depending on how you count. It's been interesting because all of these places kind of attack the market differently and kind of have different things they kind of want to be known for. You know, most of them are really concerned with just being, you know, like that hyper local brewery, you know, supplying the neighborhood, supplying their tap room. And then, you know, you have other places like Three Heads that, you know, is now in a $4 or $5 million brewery in Rochester's neighborhood of the arts that, you know, is on a 30 barrel system, you know, 5 or 6 90 barrel fermenters, and, you know, they're pumping out, you know, 7,000-8,000 barrels a year, and, you know, concerned with being on Wegmans store shelves, you know, so it's been interesting to see. It's given me a lot of stories to tell, which I'm really thankful for.
And so that it creates this very interesting situation in which you come in as a writer, where the perception or knowledge of beer of and from this area would probably be limited to some of the big names that you would have mentioned originally. Genesee, Jenny Cream Ale, Rohrbach. But this new wave, as it is in so many other places, is based around that very small neighborhood community feel. Absolutely. So by virtue of that alone, names and understandings and, you know, excitement probably doesn't reverberate terribly far outside of the immediate area.
It doesn't. I mean, Buffalo is more noteworthy if you're looking at things that are, you know, brands that are kind of more... not noteworthy. I mean, because I would say the quality of Buffalo beer is better than Rochester, but that could start a whole other firestorm. But
what's the difference?
Oh, the difference.
And I should ask too, because and this is my ignorance showing. So having been away from the area for a decade now, but Buffalo and Rochester, at least in terms of growth, probably wouldn't be too different the last few years.
Yeah.
So given that the way that those cities have evolved, what's the difference in your eyes?
I would say two things. I think there's more money behind the Buffalo scene. I think some of these palatial places that have opened, you walk in right away and you can say, wow, these people really paid attention to the taproom experience. Where a lot of breweries in the Rochester area, you know, have really nice taprooms, but they've been opened on a budget. You know, they've been more concerned with, you know, just that home brewer kind of trying to live up to his dream.
Why do you think there's that difference?
I'm not sure, honestly. I'm not sure if there's just people who saw it as more of an investment opportunity in Buffalo, maybe. You know, but when I say that Buffalo beer is better than Rochester beer, I just mean that I think the top, like if I were to like name my top 5 or 6 Buffalo breweries, I think those would be better than the top echelon of Rochester breweries. I think Rochester beer is progressively getting better, but I think there's still a lot of bad beer, and I think people are becoming more educated to that, you know, and saying like, oh, you know, like this tastes slick. Maybe this shouldn't taste like this, or, you know, or this has, you know, this is kind of overly phenolic or whatever, things like that.
So, and so when, and to clarify too, because I think when people talk about good or quality beer, there's always this subsection where it, you're talking about the actual like objective process of what the beer physically is.
Yes.
Not just it tastes good or bad, depending on who you are.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, there's, you know, I mean, that's the core question. That's the only question that really matters anyways, right? I mean, is the beer good? Yes. Cool. I'll drink it.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think Rochester, has kind of lagged behind because I kind of look at it as, and this is no knock on the breweries that have been here, but people are kind of from the Rohrbach, Genesee, CB school of brewing. So they're more concerned with traditional or, you know, what I call like a New York State IPA. You know, it's going to be heavy on the two row, maybe bigger in the malt backbone. And then, you know, with those traditional C's hops, you know, so it's going to have like that, for lack of a better term, kind of like that onion flavor, you know, kind of like that more aggressive bitterness, you know, and that's been like the Rochester IPA for a long, long time. That's, you know, it's changing pretty rapidly, actually, which is kind of fun to watch and really even more fun to chronicle.
Hmm.
But so I think they've just gotten better just because people are kind of moving away from that old school. I mean, the old school is still lovely and it's still awesome. I mean, you look at, I would argue the Naked Dove down in Canandaigua, you know, it's started by two ex-Jenny employees. You know, it was the head brewer, Jenny, and then the head of sales, head of marketing. So the brewer at Naked Dove, Dave Schlosser, was the only guy who's ever been head brewer at all three of Rochester's breweries. So he was head brewer at Rohrbach, head brewer at Jenny, and head brewer at CB's. You know, he's the guy who came up with the Rohrbach Scotch Ale. That's his recipe.
Hmm.
You know, and his 45 Fathoms Porter, you know, is kind of like Rochester's version of Cleveland's Eddie Fitz. You know, it's like that, just that classic, perfect porter.
Hmm.
You know, which when you would open the BJCP guidelines and, you know, this is the beer you would see. So, I mean, you have breweries like that are making these classic styles really, really well. But I guess you guys have done a good job of chronicling, you know, how, you know, what creates buzz or what creates, you know, hype, which is a slippery term, but, you know, what gets people excited. And there hasn't really been a Rochester brewery that's kind of been like, hey, we got to get to Rochester because, you know, this brewery is releasing this beer and, you know, we're going to go wait in line for it. Or, you know, it's, you know, I mean, Rochester breweries do very well because they cater to what the Rochester beer nerds are, you know, what Rochester beer people want, which is Scotch Ale, which is cream ale.
This creates a really interesting, I think, just perpetual loop, more or less,
yeah,
in which case the, in this, it's good business where you're making products that will sell to your market because that's what they like and what mm-hmm. they expect. However, and this maybe gets to where you step in terms of the way that you have a bigger picture view of what goes on with beer in the Rochester area, is that, you know, if you're making those classic German mm-hmm. UK styles that have always been a hit from my perspective mm-hmm. here in this part of New York mm-hmm. State, there is still an issue of trying to find ways to carefully innovate or create new opportunities for mm-hmm. drinkers too. So on one hand, like, you've got to make the Scotch Ale
yeah.
that everyone's going to love. But on the other hand, I'm curious, are there ways that you're seeing breweries trying to push or gently pull people toward what would be a bit more modern in terms of today's beer and beer
Absolutely.
Styles?
There's, I mean, just some of the breweries I've written about over the last year. You know, it's like I have a list of projects that are on the horizon sitting at my desk in the newsroom, and I think I have 10 or 12 places outlined right now.
Who do you think is doing that, kind of working both sides of that really well right now in terms of having to do what they have and to cater to customers mm-hmm. right now, but also trying to find ways to do new things?
I think the best answer for that is Fifth Frame, right in downtown Rochester, St. Paul Street, right in the heart of downtown. Actually, it's 4 or 5 blocks from Genesee.
Mm-hmm. What is it that they're doing that makes them
so
unique?
So John Mervine, who's the head brewer there, it was also one of the co-founders of Rock Brewing, and left that after a few years, and he's been working on this other project. So Fifth Frame is a combination coffee roaster brewery. So they have an off-site facility where they roast all their own coffee, and then they implement coffee in a lot of their beers, and then they also have a good-sized 10-barrel brew house, which is pretty big for what we're seeing in Rochester. But, you know, he's making like really cool dry hopped lagers. You know, like he's done two different versions of his Kolsch. You know, one was dry hopped. You know, he's used different hops to kind of accentuate different characteristics of that beer. You know, he made a really beautiful Helles lager. He did like this imperial, like probably like a Northern English brown ale maybe, but just like a really, really nice big chocolatey brown ale. But then he's also doing like those juice bombs that people get really excited about. And you know, he's done some milkshake IPAs. The last one that just came out was a cherry crumble sundae IPA. So it was a milkshake. It was a milkshake IPA with, you know, with lactose, with waffle cones. I forgot if they liquefy it or if they literally like, you know, seep it in like dry hop with it. But so yeah, and then with then just a ton of cherry. So it was supposed to taste like a liquid cherry crumble.
So when something like that takes place, what's the reaction you see from local beer drinkers?
Well, see, there's a very vocal subset of Rochester beer nerds that are on Facebook.
And you could say that about any city.
Yeah, right? Yeah, but so there's three or four Facebook groups, uh-huh. And specifically there's one called the Flower City Beer Appreciation Association. That's the original Rochester Beer Facebook group. It's been around for 7 or 8 years. It's got like 7 or 8,000 members at this point, so a pretty sizable contingent of people. And, you know, that's the kind of group where you see people posting, you know, this Fifth Frame beer, or you and I were talking a little bit earlier about Mortalis, which just opened down in Avon, which is roughly 35 minutes south of downtown Rochester, Livingston County. And they, so Mortalis opened with 8 beers. They had like 4 New England style IPAs, a pale ale with Galaxy hops. They had a peach guava milkshake IPA. They had a sour raspberry double IPA, and then they had a milk stout with Nutter Butter cookies that they liquefy the cookies, and then they also had an imperial coffee stout, and then they had, you know, to prove that they're from Rochester, they also had a cream ale, but that was with strawberries. So and
this is in the land of Jenny cream ale.
Yes, exactly. So this yeah. This place has been open for 3 weeks now. They opened the middle of August, and they have a small 5-barrel system, so they're only releasing crawlers of their beers on Thursdays and Sundays right now. My buddy Zach and I, Zach is the general manager at Tap 'Em Out, which is still Rochester's best beer bar, and we went down there last Sunday, and we got there at 11:30. They open at noon, and there was already a line of 30 people waiting outside just to buy their crawlers, because that's, you know, that's the type of buzz about beer that people want to wait in line for, weirdly. Zach and I were sitting in line. I'm just like, I just want to go in and drink beer. He's like, cool. So we just got out of the crawler line and went and drank beer.
So tell me about that, because I think, you know, like it was a half joke, I guess, but perhaps not really a joke at all. Like, if you go to any city, there's certainly going to be, you know, a subsegment of beer fans who are kind of the deep in the weeds, people who think about it too much, like us.
Yes.
And so finding people who are willing to stand in line city to city probably isn't too difficult.
No.
But it's the building of that culture, I think, is helps to signify something changing and something new.
It's kind of like that other half effect, right?
Right. Well, tell me about that, though.
Yeah.
How that's happening here, because other half perhaps is a great example that you could share in the way that they've approached the area, but the way that breweries, you know, trying to extend beyond just you've got 30 people who want to show up super early for a release, but certainly there's got to be some capacity in terms of trying to get more people to try to buy into that as well. How does that happen?
I mean, you can look at it this two ways. All right, so Wegmans is, you know, the big dominant supermarket in the Northeast here, you know, with 90, 95 stores based in Rochester. And they've kind of done more to embrace craft beer over the last few years. But then you look at it, and their top two selling craft beers are Rohrbach Scotch Ale and Rohrbach Space Kitty, which is their double IPA. That's just in the Rochester area, just from people that I know.
So the Scotch Ale makes sense. Why do you think the double IPA is so popular?
I mean, hops are driving the market. Yeah. You know, I mean, Rochester's no different.
That double IPA seems like a hell of a jump from a Scotch Ale.
But once they went into cans, that's when Rohrbach really took off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they introduced this beer maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and was a big, bright, citrus-hopped IPA. kind of changed a little bit, a little maybe heavier in the malt backbone.
I was in the Pittsford Wegmans yesterday.
Did you meet Barnabas?
I met Barnabas.
He is one of the greatest people in Rochester beer. He's one of the greatest people on planet Earth.
He's
a 6'7" bearded guy who was the beer manager at Pittsford Wegmans, which is Pittsford's like Wegmans flagship store.
He's three of me. He's like 6'7", like 250 ish. Oh,
easily. Yeah. I mean, I'm 6'2" and Barnabas makes me feel small. But he's just the sweetest, gentlest soul. And I've learned more about beer from that guy than pretty much just about anyone. He'll recommend a beer podcast or like, hey, I just read this article. Well, you should check this out.
And Barnabas, he came up and to say hello and asked if there was anything that he could help with, which is wonderful. And I told him that, you know, I'm visiting from out of town and I'm just kind of marveling at what this selection is. When I left upstate New York 10 years ago, you know, I told him, you know, it was Ithaca beer and maybe a couple others. I never would have imagined that I walk into a Wegmans where I see there's Threes Brewing, their Valet, their Pilsner, which I feel like everybody geeks out about. There's Single Cut was there. There were a couple other Brooklyn breweries, and he told me that the Pittsford store has a constant rotation of Sip of Sunshine coming in, which is, again, like something I never would have imagined to happen.
You know, and we've been getting random drops of Alchemist stuff, you know, with you know, for only for on-site on-site consumption. So we've been getting Focal Banger, and we got Elena too, and we got Hetty.
In my head, I said, I never would have imagined this to happen. But now you tell me, how does this happen?
I mean, so this, I guess let's call it the other half effect. So other half has done three mobile can releases here in Rochester since, would have been since March. They did two earlier this spring. Actually, one was kind of at like the tail end of winter. And, you know, they attracted 400 or 500 people at some of these releases. The first one, I think, had 450, I think is what I was told, somewhere in that range. You know, they sell out of hundreds of cases of beer. You know, the second time they come up, they triple the amount of beer they bring. They bring like 600 cases, and that sells out in 2 hours. And I think it's people recognizing that the Rochester beer drinker's appetite is really voracious. You know, it's kind of like this introduction to line culture, you know, that people are willing to do that. I mean, you know, you might not agree with it. You might think it's dumb. You know, sometimes it's fun. Sometimes I think it's stupid. You know, I've done it too, and it's an experience. And you know, have your line shares. But I think it's people kind of seeing that the Rochester market is really ripe for these kind of sexier beers. So that's why you see other half, you know, working feverishly to open a location, second location in Bloomfield, you know, or East Bloomfield, which is, you know, about 35-40 minutes from Rochester. In an old farm brewery that was down there before. I think I'm taking these answers in all these weird directions that you might not have anticipated.
Perfect. I like weird answers. And so you and I spoke the day of the announcement when Other Half had announced that they were going to be in Bloomfield.
That timing was so dumb. I was so mad because I had been sitting on that story for a few months.
Well, so tell me
about... And I wake up and my phone is just going crazy. And I get a text from Matt from Other Half. And he's like, okay, let's do this. I'm like, oh, fudge, what's going on? And then I turn on my, you know, throw my announcements. And I'm like, oh, sale of the building went public. So I guess we're going to have to jump on this story.
That was
a crazy journalism day.
How does something like that happen? I think from an outside point of view, the idea of Other Half, which I don't think anybody would argue, recognizes one of the best breweries in the world, deciding to open up a location in upstate New York in a town, East Bloomfield as a town is like a couple thousand people, attached to Bloomfield, which is larger, but still, you know, in the middle of farmland, more or less.
Nearest claim to fame down there might be the skiing mountain.
Like there's not a hell of a lot going on there.
No.
And so when we talked about kind of the importance and value of what that meant, there's a whole host of reasons. I think that you had mentioned in terms of, you know, connecting back to these drops that they did and the building, the idea of the line culture. from the reporting that you did, from the relationships that you've built with those guys, and especially to telling the story, what is it that you think happened that made this possible to take place where geographically?
Yeah. You know, Rochester was the third place that they did one of their mobile can releases. You know, they started in Syracuse at Jason Purdy's awesome bar, Now and Later. One of, still one of the best beer bars. I feel like I'm doing pitches for all these places. Like hey, here's your upstate beer guide. But, you know, great little beer bar in Syracuse. And then they went to Thin Man in Buffalo, which is a really awesome brewery owned by Mike Schatzel, who owns, like, all of the cool Buffalo beer locations. You know, used to own Blue Monk and things like that. No, I own Thin Man and Morpat and ABV and a bunch of other cool places. But so they came to Rochester third, and it's kind of telling because it always feels like Rochester's kind of like the left behind city. You know, you'll see like these huge grandiose announcements like, oh, Buffalo's getting $1 billion from the state to do this. You know, oh, Rochester, we're going to give you $50 million so you can update your riverfront. You know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the forgotten. Upstate city, and you know, we could have that argument of what is upstate, what's central New York, what's western New York, but we're not going to have that because that's we're here
get
to talk
13
about,
different answers.
Yes, exactly. You know, but we're here to talk about beer. So and those guys, I don't think they had, so when they decided to come to Rochester, when they came to Tap Mallet in the South Wedge, which is the little neighborhood in Rochester, just south of downtown, I don't think they anticipated that type of
They didn't think 400 people were going to show up.
Yeah, on a snowy Saturday morning, they would have to cut back allotments just to get more people beer. Yeah, I don't think they understood what kind of circus they were entering, which is really kind of cool that people in Rochester reacted that way. But I mean, talking to those guys quite a bit, I think they track when they're checking IDs. They track to see where these people are from. So like down at the releases down in Brooklyn, I guess they get a really healthy amount of people from Rochester who come down there quite frequently to buy their beer. So I think they kind of had this idea that maybe it might happen. But then, you know, when I talked to them, when I talked to Matt I talked to Matt the day of the release, and I'm like, you know, let's just do a quick interview. He's like, sure. And those guys are great. I love them. And it's been a lot of fun to work with. But, you know, and he's like, you know, he's smiling at me, like with this genuine smile. And, you know, you can see how excited he was about it. And he's like, we'll be back in Rochester very, very soon. And that kind of got my wheels turning. I'm like, oh, maybe this could be something. Like there have been rumblings about the Nedlow space, which is the building, the former building they bought. You know, beautiful $3 million building. And sit on 4 acres with a hop yard right behind it. And, you know, a pretty nice 10-barrel system. It needs to be reworked, I guess. But, you know, he's like, well, you know, we'll be back soon. And, you know, they're back within 5 or 6 weeks or a month or whatever it was. It was a very short window of time. Like, they came back to Rochester before they went back to Buffalo or before they went back to Syracuse, you know, before they went back to Albany. And that's, I think, when they saw the reaction the second time and like, okay, this isn't a fluke. This is real. You know, like, we're pulling people from Buffalo. We're getting people from Southern Ontario. We're getting some people from Syracuse. You know, they're like, you know, from a business standpoint, you know, they're, you know, spreading their brand and getting the beer in the hands of consumers who might not have been down to Brooklyn for that experience, you know, kind of, you know, spreading the other half gospel, I guess. And, they're seeing this reaction. And then, you know, I get a text from Matt on a random day, and he's like, oh, come have a beer. And he's in Rochester. And I'm like, holy cow, they're looking at buildings in Rochester. I was just like, yeah. And then
tell me about the reporting for this, because this is one of the things, this story in particular, given the value and importance, not just in terms of what it means locally, but just the interest for such a name brewery.
Oh yeah, so I cover beer and breaking news at the Democrat and Chronicle in Rochester. I've been there 10 years. And my actual job, like 90-95% of my job, is I sit in front of the police scanner Tuesday through Saturday nights, you know, waiting for something to happen.
I feel like the clarification there is it's like hazy IPAs and murder.
Yes. We actually had a former catchy headline. Our former arts and entertainment reporter, Jeff Svebeck, he termed it hops and homicide. So on quiet nights I can write about beer, and it's been a nice counterbalance, you know, from standing at crime scenes to you know, going out to Avon or Pittsburgh or wherever and writing about these longtime homebrewers are following their dream and, you know, getting some bank loans and, you know, opening this this 3.5 barrel or, you know, 2.5 barrel, 7 barrel, whatever, brew space. So other half was interesting because I've been talking with those guys quite a bit, just kind of like being nosy and following up, like, you know, like, hey, anything you want to tell me, anything you want to tell me, anything you want to tell me. And so I found out, you know, a month or two ago before this all became public that they were, you know, buying this former brewery that closed in Bloomfield. You know, this place closed, East Bloomfield rather. They closed, you know, they announced they were open for 3 years. They announced they were closing a week after they met all the GABF. Mm-hmm. So it was really a lot of confusion. And so in the 4+ years I've been writing about beer, the people that own that brewery were like the only people that would just never talk to me. They just didn't care.
Why is that?
They come from a lot of money and
just didn't think it was worthwhile in terms of just
kind of quiet, private people.
Sure.
Private people.
That's fine.
You know, just not, you know, just don't want the attention, I guess.
So in terms of the way that, so like you had mentioned, you had conversations with the folks at Other Half before. In terms of the way that kind of built out your reporting to tell the story to where you found out what was going on, what were the steps there that kind of led you from A to B?
Well, it was a lot of, you know, as in most good journalism, it's about building relationships, you know, proving to people that you're trustworthy, that you have integrity, that, you know, when they tell you something off the record, it's going to remain that way. You know, it's a privilege and you have to work to cultivate and maintain those relationships. So, I mean, you know, when you're a journalist, all you really have is your integrity. So you have to make sure that you maintain that no matter what. And so it was a lot of that and, you know, became friendly with those guys and especially Matt Monahan, the CEO, and, you know, exchanged text messages quite a bit. And, you know, he would kind of drop morsels here and there about, you know, this is happening and, you know, or this is happening, or he would ask my opinion on something in Rochester or.
What do you feel like it means in terms of journalistic practice? So both you and I come from, I guess, a traditional journalism background. The coverage of beer and the beer industry, I probably safely say, feels relatively new in terms of the way that people are approaching it with a more serious journalism take.
Absolutely.
How do you feel that the way that you utilize that kind of the knowledge and experience that you have of being a journalist to tell stories in like the best possible reporting way, so it's not just, hey, here's a cool beer, but really it is that full-on reporting practice.
I mean, honestly, there's no difference. I mean, there's obviously a huge difference in covering a murder trial or covering a new brewery opening, but at its core, you're still practicing, you know, you're still following the same guidelines. You know, you have to remain ethical, you have to maintain, you know, I mean, it kind of blurs for me because I'm considered a columnist too. So, you know, I'll write like, hey, here's your best beers to enjoy for Labor Day or, you know, or stuff like that. So, you know, I can have opinions. But like, you know, with something like Other Half, it's, you know, telling a straight ahead news story. So it's making sure that, like I said, you know, that the sources trust you. So, you know, I was very fortunate that for the first 24 to 36 hours of the story or so, I was the only journalist they talked to. And that was because I had demonstrated to them, you know, that I was trustworthy and that I could, you know, tell their story and in a manner that would, you know, interest readers and would
How do you personally do that? So there's the kind of the broad perspective of just trying to build relationships, which are very personable and come from an honest, heartfelt place. Your own perspective and routine in terms of trying to build these relationships. What's the way that you like to go about them to create this kind of opportunity?
I mean, you just have to remain present. You have to, you know, like I have like I said, at my desk, I have a list of 10 or 12 places that I'm trying to stay on top of for breweries that are opening, you know, so it's, you know, every month or two, if I don't hear from these people, you know, I'll message them and say, hey, you know, what's your timeline look like? You know, it's getting close where I can come visit and, you know, bring a photographer with me and we can, you know, excuse me, where we can tell your story. That was a Suarez burp, by the way. That was pretty good.
This beer is very good.
Yeah. We're drinking Suarez Local Boy right now. It's just delightful, but, and so it's just showing that you're a real person, you know, it's showing that, and I think also from my perspective, it's building a reputation. You know, it's like I've been writing about beer since 2014 for the paper here. So it's just there's a body of work that people know what my work entails. Like there might be other people upstate who, you know, will write off press releases, but you know, if I'm going to tell a story, I want to make sure that I'm talking to the people involved. I want to, you know, actually do some reporting and add some value to what people are getting. You know, I want them to get things from my stories that they're not going to get anywhere else, you know. So
like what?
In the case of Other Half, you know, it was just, you know, I was the only person who was able to break news that, you know, that their plans involved, you know, the potential construction of two other buildings besides the building that's already on the property, you know, or the 4 acres that they're trying to buy behind the space that will, you know, allow them to add more parking and add like a pavilion type space, you know, to kind of maximize, you know, our limited summer windows here.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just telling people stories. It's, you know, asking questions, and it's, you know, potentially getting nerdy. Like, you know, when I wrote about Mortalis, the burrito on Avon that people are crazy in love with right now, and for good reason, because they do have a lot of promise. But it's wanting to show people, you know, the people behind these stories. You know, it's like, okay, you know, there's, you know, hundreds of breweries opening all the time. Or not hundreds, but you know, breweries are opening at a pretty
every single day,
exactly at a crazy pace, you know, and it's still, you know, when's the bubble gonna break. So after Nedlow closed, the Other Half building that they just bought, I had to write a kind of a rebuttal piece that matters, because they're like, oh, does this mean the bubble's gonna pop? And I'm like, please calm down, we're gonna be okay. You know, the bubble would be, you know, we wake up tomorrow and half the breweries that are here are closed. Like that, like that's not how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just building relationships, really, is and building trust in people and letting them see that, you know, that you can be trusted, and you know, it's you know, making sure that people can have faith in you, and you know, it's what I do with my police sources. You know, like if I text an investigator from the Rochester Police Department and say, hey, you know, can this crime scene look serious, you know, and they trust me enough that they'll reach back out to me and they'll say, well, no, you know, the guy was just shot in the foot. So, you know, this is probably not something you have to devote your attention to. I mean, granted, that's obviously tragic when any of that stuff happens, but it's the same type of thing. It's just good reporting is cultivating sources, maintaining, you know, maintaining and building and helping people understand that they can trust you.
If you were to take off your reporter hat, put on your columnist hat, regarding...
I do have two hats at the table right now. I could do that.
For the impact of what the Other Half move is, and I know the original timeline as we sit down today would be months from now, so we're looking at toward the end of 2018, which probably isn't going to happen.
I think it's going to happen quicker. I think it's
faster than that?
I do.
Okay. Yeah. The reason I said that is because I haven't heard a damn thing
about it. Other Half was kind of like had their introduction to the Rochester beer market. Hey, I'm going to come and shake hands and kiss babies and do all the political stuff. they did that two or three weeks ago for the Flower City Brewers Fest, which mm-hmm. is the beer festival that's organized by the New York State Brewers Association. And then Rohrbach is the host of the Rochester Public Market. Great venue, great festival. But Other Half was kind of like a last minute add to the festival. So they came up here, and then the afternoon before the festival, actually started in the morning, they did a quick mobile can release to tap and mallet again. You know, they brought like 100 cases of beer. They were sold out of it in 45 minutes.
Wow.
And, you know, had people, you know, they were kind of unsure what's going to happen, you know, with a lunch hour release on a Friday, but they had tons of people and no issue kind of selling out this beer. And you've seen other breweries kind of follow the can model. Fifth Frame's doing it too. And K2 Brothers and Penfield's doing it, and so.
Wow.
But
so maybe this actually leads in to answer the question in an even better way. Yeah. If that timeline has been moved up, what this means in terms of beer locally?
Yeah.
So one, just them being here, but now also their physical existence here is now earlier than anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, this is all an educated guess. I don't know anything.
Sure.
I mean, I can't tell you anything anyways, but I think it's all a product of how long licensing is going to take, you know, mm-hmm. with applying for a new federal and state license. You know, once you get that federal, the state could come almost instantaneously. But I'd say by the end of the year is probably a safe bet.
But in terms of...
So but it, I think it changes
the local anticipation, beer. The excitement then, yeah. You know, the plan all along, if I remember correctly, was to have that place operational in the fall-ish.
Yeah.
Which again is always, for any business, right, it's always exactly. reliant on yeah. paperwork and all that.
Right.
But to again, to get back to the idea of, first of all, the selection to open mm-hmm. there in the first place, but then also just to be ready to go... and get this done so they can open, start selling beer. What do you feel that means for the locality around here in terms of beer and beer culture?
I think it's nothing but good. It's just going to draw people into the Rochester market who haven't been here before. You know, it's going to be like...
But not just good, like what do you feel that it means in terms of where things stand right now, given, you know, the last whatever...
I mean, year, I think I had years. It. I think I had it the time of... Like, when this story broke, like, I put out a tweet. I'm like, I think my tweet said, like, I can't overstate enough, like, how big of a deal this is. Like, what this means for Rochester, not only statewide, but nationwide and even international. You know, you're going to draw people from Ontario. And I think it's, like, people know what Genesee is, but at its core, you know, I mean, it's still one of the top 20 biggest breweries in the country. Mm. You know, it's a pretty big conglomerate, you know. Owned by a Costa Rican company that owns, you know, Magic Hat and Portland Beer and Pyramid and Labatt USA. Big, have a story come out soon actually about there's a Labatt brew house that's opening in Buffalo in the next few weeks.
Oh, that's their innovation or experimental.
Yeah, their version of the Genesee brew house in Rochester, which has been the best thing Genesee's ever done because it's served as like a gateway to their brand. Hmm. So, you know, and they draw thousands and thousands of people there every year, you know, to kind of experience and Genesee beer and kind of serves as a gateway to other Rochester breweries. I think other half has that potential, but on a bigger level, just because other half is like this sexy, you know, this cutting edge, you know, brewery that Rochester doesn't really have. I think there's some breweries in Rochester that have that potential to draw people in, but they're also small. You know, you don't have Rock Brewing, you don't have Swiftwater, like these really good Rochester breweries, you don't have them flying over to Sweden and pouring at a festival there, you know, mm-hmm. or going to Denmark or you know, pouring at a festival up in Canada or, you know, or going out to Modern Times in San Diego and pouring at their festival. Like, you don't have, Rochester beer doesn't have that name recognition that other half has instantaneously. Like, there's people from all over the country who've probably never had a sip of other half's liquid, but they know specifically what other half is because of, you know, this, the beautiful can artwork, you know, the clean lines, the, you know, bright colors, pinks sometimes, you know, the, you know, all the green labels, all of the, you know, repeating nomenclature. And this opening in Rochester kind of validates Rochester almost, you know, it's like I was talking about earlier, you know, like Rochester tends to be kind of like this forgotten upstate sister or upstate brother or whatever, upstate child out of, you know, the Syracuses and the Buffalo, you know, because Buffalo's got two major league sports, you know, Syracuse has Syracuse University, you know, so they have a nationally identifiable, you know, Division I college team and not so much in football anymore. They suck at football, which is kind of funny, but definitely in basketball because Jim Bam's still there and still being cranky. But so this kind of gives Rochester a leg up on what these other places don't have. I mean, this is, like I said, you know, like you could see another half beer produced in Rochester poured at a festival in Arizona or Washington.
That sounds weird.
Doesn't it though?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really crazy to me that this is actually happening, and it's even cooler. And I feel so fortunate that I'm able to chronicle it and, you know, get to tell those stories and that people click on it enough that my newsroom is, my editors have deemed it, you know, worthy of me given it quite a bit of, you know, I do quite a bit of beer coverage and, you know, it's, you know, and it, you'll walk in because we have six big TVs in the front of our newsroom, and one of them's this tool called Chartbeat, where you can see at any given second, you know, how many people are on your website, what story they're in, and then they measure engagement time. So, you know, and you'll see, like, you know, if we're doing really well, you'll see, like, you know, 1,000 people on our website at any given point. then you'll see like the beer story up at the first or second position. You'll see like, wow, there's 70 people reading my beer story right now, and they're staying in that story, you know, an 800 word story for an average of a minute. And you know, you're just like, holy cow, that's amazing that people trust me enough to come to our website for beer news.
How does that make you feel?
It's amazing. Like I was you know, coming out of grad school, I was like, oh cool, I'm gonna be a teacher. And I was like really bad at it. I was just, you know, I was just babysitting. It was just,
what were you teaching?
So I taught for a bit at Genesee Community College out in Batavia, which is the biggest city between Buffalo and Rochester. And so I was teaching English 101 and 102 at the community college there. And my, you know, my boss hated me. I show up for work at Shorts and she's like, that's so wrong and just irresponsible. And I'm just like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. And then I, you know, subbed for a bit in the Western Antioch Central School District, which is where we're sitting right now. And I was, you know, doing middle school. I'm just like, this is, just feel like I'm just babysitting these kids. Like, I'm not, like, helping them at all. I'm not very good at this. And it's like, oh, maybe I'll go back to journalism. And, you know, because I worked at a newspaper for a few years out in Montana before I moved back to Rochester. So I went to Montana for undergrad, University of Maine for grad school, and then back to Rochester. It's like, oh, you finished grad school. It's like, what am I doing? I guess I'm going to go say hi to mom and dad again. So, you know, then I started the paper again when I was 24, and I just celebrated 10 years last week, actually. Congrats. Which is kind of crazy. Yeah. You know, knock on wood, still making it work.
You didn't assume Hops and Homicide were in your future.
No, I thought I was going to be a sports writer. I thought I was going to cover high school sports or cover AAA baseball, the Rochester Red Wings. Like, that's what I'm like, that's going to be so cool, get paid to watch sports. And then I just had, actually, it's the same editor who kind of gave me both roles, who really believed in me. She's like, well, you're good on deadline. You're good at telling stories. You know, you're good under pressure. We had beer columnists that were leaving, and they were like, they didn't want to write about local beer as much. So I'm like, well, you know, let me do 3 sample columns for you. So I did that, and like, oh, this is pretty cool. I think we might be able to make this work. And then, you know, we were getting our asses kicked on breaking news at night. And my editor was like, well, you know, let's see if we can carve out a role for you there. You know, I don't think you ever kind of considered you were going to be hanging out at crime scenes. But here I am, you know, 4 years later. It's still a thing. And, you know, still getting eyeballs on our website. And feel fortunate that people will click on my stuff. But, yeah, it's really weird how life works out.
Yeah. So the way that connected to Other Half and the excitement and reaction people had to your story, the flip side of that, which you briefly mentioned, the Labatt and Jenny kind of innovation labs,
yeah.
Which I don't know if that's a that's too what they, far that's of a term.
No, that's what they call it. Yeah. I mean, that's a fair term for it. You know, pilot batch system, you know. Mm-hmm.
Those are two long-standing brands that going back as far back as I can remember as a kid who grew up in this area.
So Western New York standbys.
Yeah, those are things that I recognize as being a part of beer consumption amongst friends and family. You know, mm-hmm. when I think for as far back as I can remember, opening up the fridge, like Labatt was in the fridge. Like that's just what people drank. But now they're actively trying to find ways to change people's mm-hmm. thoughts and expectations of mm-hmm. what they are. How do you think that they're succeeding or not in regards to these new
Genesee's,
projects?
Genesee's wildly successful right now. I mean, they just...
Well, I should say, one of the things that my limited
exposure...
So it's
the same parent company.
The limited batch seasonal releases they've been doing based off recipes that they've been doing there have been some wonderful beers that I've really, really enjoyed. Yeah. And so... They need, I would imagine, in order to try to like get more attention and get people interested in who they are and what they do in this era of more craft beer. These kind of things feel necessary for companies of this size and scope.
It does. So the Genesee Brew House is the 20 barrel pilot batch brewery for the Genesee Brewery, so it was started in 2012. The guy who runs it, this big affable Siebold train, you know, traditional brewmaster named Dean Jones, who's worked all over the country and worked at breweries in and around Rochester. And so he's been responsible for kind of coming up with some of these, you know, let's do an orange honey cream ale, or let's do a ruby red grapefruit Kolsch, or, you know, or let's do a Simcoe smash beer, or
salted caramel.
Yeah, salted caramel chocolate porter.
Yeah, was just great.
Yeah, that was I'll admit that I couldn't finish a whole bottle of that just because it was so sweet, but it did taste really awesome over vanilla ice cream.
Absolutely.
I'll admit to that. Also, I don't think they're going to make that beer anytime soon just because how expensive vanilla is right now.
Mm-hmm.
But so they started this in 2012 with this old... it used to be a plumbing supply warehouse, but it was also a brewery building at certain points. And so they created this pilot batch brewery with like a beer museum, with a retail store, with a second floor restaurant, and then the third floor. Just you go up to the third floor and you see the best view of downtown Rochester and the view of the Genesee River and High Falls cascading, just like the most iconic view of Rochester you can possibly get. You know, you can look over to your left, to your right rather. You can see Kodak Tower and look over there, and you see the Metropolitan Building and stuff like that. So Genesee really kind of reinvented themselves and kind of introduced themselves to new people with this Innovation Brewery restaurant concept that is responsible for coming up with some of their quirkier or best-selling seasonals of recent. I think the idea for their Oktoberfest, which sells really well for them, came from there. The Genesee Bock was kind of resurrected from the Genesee Brewhouse and things like that. So they've done a really good job of introducing themselves to new drinkers and kind of even winning back people locally who are like, there's the old Genesee saying that it's straight from the river to your liver. And, they don't use Genesee River water. They're actually Monroe County's biggest water consumer. And they use, just the same drinking water you'd get from the city. We get it from Two Finger Lakes just south of Rochester. And so they've done a really cool job of not only reinventing themselves, but reintroducing the brand to people. And so the brewery has been a really cool gateway for that. And, it's really helped kind of solidify them and kind of built a lot more hometown pride in Jenny that I don't think existed 6 years ago. And it's done really well for their core brands. I mean, I've talked to people in sales there who say that sales locally of their three core brands have done exceedingly well and grown by leaps and bounds just because people have this is, a $6 six pack or whatever. And actually I don't know what the price is, but, it's kind of reintroduced themselves, and I think I said reintroduced about 18 times in this answer.
A new reason to think about them in the first place.
And then, so Labatt USA, not Labatt. So Labatt USA is, Labatt USA and Labatt Canada are two separate companies.
Mm-hmm.
Labatt USA is basically the U.S. importing arm. So all the Labatt stuff is still made in Canada and imported down to the States daily. And Buffalo, in Western New York specifically, but Buffalo specifically, is the number one site in the U.S. for Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue consumption. It's considered the Buffalo beer, even though it's not even made there. So Labatt seen, with Labatt seen how well it's worked for Genesee, they're kind of following this similar model and opening a 10 barrel, so a smaller system, 10 barrel innovation brewery, right next to Key Bank Center, which is where the Sabres play. And they're partnering with Pagula Sports Entertainment, who is the family that owns the Buffalo Sabres and the Buffalo Bills. And then, so the Pagulas are opening a restaurant in the same building. And then Labatt USA moved their headquarters to the second floor of this old warehouse where they're doing. And then the third and fourth floor are going to be the offices for Pagula Sports Entertainment. And the fifth floor, I think, is going to be residential. And that should be up and running, they're thinking, by October. They hired Dean Jones's assistant brewmaster, assistant brewer, Ryan Brady, who's got a really cool long story in beer. He's a lawyer who worked at DC Brow down in DC, was a cellarman there, and then ended up moving up to Rochester. His wife's an attorney also. And he was like, I want to stay in beer. So she encouraged him to stay in beer. So for the last 2.5 years, he worked at the Genesee Brewhouse. Hmm. And then once the position for the Labatt Brewmaster, Labatt USA Brewhouse, I shouldn't say brewmaster, because they're not Siebel trained in German apprentice and all that stuff, but that head brewer position at Labatt opened up. He applied for that, so the guy who's come up with some of the Genesee recipes of late will be making some of these interesting beers in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. They're gonna have a Labatt Goza, which I don't think people
that doesn't sound
right, exactly, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah, so I mean, but that's kind of what Genesee's done. You know, they've made an orange honey cream ale. They made a, you know, a mosaic dry hopped cream ale. They made an imperial cream ale. So, you know, they kind of have taken some of these core brands and like changed them up and kind of reinvented them. I need to come up with better words. I keep saying reinvented, reintroduced. But
well, so
re-energized.
I think the theme and idea behind that word as well is very important in the way that the industry and culture has changed here locally.
Yes.
And in discussing those two projects specifically, Labatt and Genesee, and the way that they're trying to update and change people's assumptions of who they are and what they do, feels very relevant to this idea of. From your perspective, as someone who covers beer locally and has seen things change so much, what do you feel is happening now that people outside of this area are missing? Why, essentially, what is happening that people should care about?
So what's my sales pitch for why people should come to this area?
Well, maybe not so much saying, like, this is why you should come here and try this beer so much as from a third-party person who's watching all of this happening and writing about it and covering it, the stories and things that you're seeing and sharing with people that feel important, but people outside of Rochester, Buffalo, upstate New York may not understand the value, the importance of why this is such a big deal.
Well, it's for Labatt and Genesee specifically, those are heritage brands. You know, those are beers that our grandfathers drank, our grandfathers' grandfathers drank. Actually, I'm not even sure how old Labatt is, but I mean, Genesee's celebrating their 140th anniversary this year, you know, the state's oldest brewery. So it's taking these things that people have always kind of known, but maybe they don't really interact with, maybe they don't, they might write it off. I'm actually surprised my cats have left me alone during this interview. I'm getting eyeballed by one right now. Oh, here he comes. So this is our, we have 2 6-month-old kittens, and the one coming at us now is Tubbs, who is, he's only 7 pounds, but he was the biggest of the litter, so we're like, we can't change his name. And apparently he feels like he's not getting any attention right now. So back to why people should care. That was a very strange segue.
That's real life.
But it kind of is, actually. It's like, oh, I'm working on a beer story, but oh, wait, I'm hearing over the scanner right now that there's a double shooting over on Avenue D, so I got to go check that out. There's a cat tail on my face right now. So I think people should care because I think, and get excited really, because there's things that are going on in Rochester that are really, you've seen a lot of these. I mean, Rochester's not really a Rust Belt city, but you see in kind of these Northeast, you know, the Pittsburghs and the Clevelands and the Buffaloes, you see a lot of this reinvention through craftsmanship and through art and through, you know, different markets or different avenues. And I think it just gives you another reason to, you know, for the last 100 years, Rochester's been known for 3 things. It was Kodak, it was Bausch & Lomb, and it was Xerox. You know, when both my parents were for Kodak. So when my mom started at Kodak in 1982, there were, I think, either 65 or 70,000 Kodak employees. And now it's just a fraction of that. And you know, you see Rochester kind of reemerging as kind of an education place, you know, with University of Rochester and Rochester Institute of Technology, kind of helping build this new economy. And I think beer's kind of been a little piece of that. You know, when we go from not having, you know, 3 breweries, like I said, and then we're up to 25, and just the area around Rochester, and you know there's like 70 or 75 in the Finger Lakes, and there's 15 in Ontario County where Canandaigua and Victor are, which is where other half will be. So it's kind of changed people's perceptions, and it's kind of given people a chance to, you know, relook at what upstate New York is. You know, it's more than just cream ale and Zweigel's hot dogs or garbage plates. You know, it's more than just this weirdly dirty, polluted river, the Genesee River, floating right through our downtown. You know, it's you know, there's people that really love and care about this area that are, you know, placing their dreams on the line or placing their lives on the line by, you know, pursuing these dreams. And I've just been lucky enough that I've been able to kind of highlight and chronicle and interview and interact and, you know, shake all these hands and tell all these stories.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to more of those stories.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. It's been great. I appreciate it. Talking Writing with Writers gives a special glimpse into the stories you read on Good Beer Hunting. These GBH Collective episodes are a great way for us to showcase the people behind the byline and what makes them tick. So we appreciate you spending your time with our stories, and we hope getting to know us better also adds a little more nuance to the words you read and voices you hear. Keep an eye out for more GBH Collective podcasts as we talk to fellow Good Beer Hunting writers and other media members who cover and think about beer. We'll dive into what it takes to create engaging stories and the behind-the-scenes work to bring it all together. As always, our music is produced by Andrew Thibodeau, and our sound engineer is Jordan Stalling of Particle Audio. Aim true, poor liberal folks. Have a great week.